It's interesting to look at it historically, since whenever the Tories go in, Scottish nationalism goes up.
Because of cretins.
Well, yeah. Oh,
Hi everyone, and welcome to another Sunday Roast, and we're back with two wonderful guests from Scotland. Let's start off with random Scottish history. Can you tell us a bit about yourself?
Jenny here, doing my bit for getting knowledge out to whoever's interested in reading it and listening to it and watching it, and yeah, just keeping busy. We're doing Satan's Invisible World Discovered still, which has been excellent, getting into the witch trials and what have you. Yeah, I don't do politics, I do Scottish history, just not a political commentator. People often come to me and go, "Oh, your take on..." No. I'm not here to change minds. I'm just here to give information.
Well, we're gonna get you talking on politics eventually.
I understand
Davey,
that.
Davey from Indie Truck Davey, can you tell us a bit about yourself for anyone who's new to the show?
My name is David McGuinness. I used to do a vlog and see my truck on Facebook Live until we moved to YouTube. I'm new with the Two Davies YouTube channel. I'm a political observer and I don't mind giving my opinions on it either.
Wonderful. We're going to hear a lot from you in a moment. My wonderful co-host, Alex, can you tell us a bit about yourself for anyone who's new to the show and the podcast?
Hi, I'm Alex, also known as Political X. I'm a historian, journalist, and YouTuber. And my excellent co-host, Max, can you please introduce yourself?
My name is Max. I run the Robert Spear channel where I talk about British politics and Brexit in particular. Well, I guess we have two Scots on, so we better start talking about Scotland, Alex.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very good idea. Hamza Youssef
So,
resigning.
yes. What happened there? Well, so could you tell us a bit of, maybe David, could you tell us a bit about what led up to his resignation? And then maybe we can talk about what's the future.
Yes, I can explain to you exactly what happened. What happened was that the right wing of the SNP were never that pleased with the coalition with the Greens. They laid a bit of pressure on Humza. Humza badly handled breaking the coalition with the Greens. The Greens were having a vote today, or is it next Thursday, on whether they wanted to leave the coalition with the SNP anyway. It just so happened that Humza didn't handle it well. The Greens got a wee bit upset, forgetting that politics is a bloody rough game, you know, but Didums, their feelings were hurt. So the opposition parties in Holyrood decided that they, because of the way it handled things, they were going to hold a vote of no confidence in Humza Yousaf as First Minister. And then the Labour Party kept in with they were going to hold a vote of no confidence on the Scottish Government altogether. So Humza stepped down in order to allow a new leader to take over and maybe patch up things with the other parliamentary parties. So the Conservative Party didn't get the vote of no confidence. The Labour Party held their vote of no confidence in the Scottish Government, which they lost. And they knew there's a new leader to be put in place, and this... There isn't going to be a competition. The new leader will be John Swinney.
Can you tell us a bit about John Swinney? He was a deputy leader in the past. He was working with Nicola Sturgeon and Alex Salmond, if that's true. Is that correct?
He was a party's representative in the first term of Holyrood. Because Alec was an MP at the time. So John was an MSP and he led the SNP in Holyrood from 2000 to 2004. He was then a minister in Alex Salmond's government from 2007 to 2011 and from 2011 to Nicola Sturgeon took over in 2014, to which point John became the party's deputy leader. And last year, because of family problems, he's got some family problems, his parents are getting on, he decided he was going to step back to frontline politics. A year on, Humza's resigned. John's put himself forward to become First Minister. He's the sort of person who could unite the party and bring it all back together again, because there has been factions within the party. There's no point in kidding on about it, but there have always been factions within the party. Anybody here in Scotland who understands the SNP will know that its primary purpose is independence, and that brought people from each and all of the political divide together under that one purpose. So one of the reasons why the SNP have been good policy makers is because they've got the right, the left, and the centre all within the party. But that leads to fractions and friction. It leads to factions and friction, and that's what we've just seen. One of the factions has basically forced an end to the coalition with the Greens, and Mr Youssef hasn't handled
I'd like to bring in Jenny just for a second. Do you think John Sweeney would be a better choice of leader, or what's her name? Kate Forbes.
Kate is no longer running. Kate has bowed out. She's obviously decided that it's not for her. I think she took quite a bashing through the initial, last year's election for First Minister. I'm not sure she's looking to repeat that. These people have families that they want to protect as much as anyone. So I can understand. You would need to have balls of steel to run for such a position in Scotland at the moment, because, like Davey's saying, there's factions and the most of them are out to get you. The media's out to get you. I think it's a position that loses your friends, to be honest, which is why Nicola deserves so much respect for having maintained her position for as long as she did, because she took one hell of a beating throughout her tenure as First Minister. So I don't envy anybody going for this position, but John Swinney I would vote for. He would have my backing, purely because he's got so much experience within government in Scotland. He's been there and seen people come and go, and he's seen policies come out, and he knows how it all works.
Is it true that he also has respect outside the SNP?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, I've not heard very much in the way of ill will said against him, but that might be because he kind of took himself away for the front line, like Davey says, for the last year. So he's just been biding his time in the wings a wee bit. And that was probably a good move on his part. It certainly would have given him a more objective view on the whole thing. So I think he's probably coming at it from a position of strength.
I got the impression he was receiving a bit of criticism as he had a position in education secretary. I think that was down during COVID, wasn't it? Was that? Do you think that's fair or not? Or
I can't speak to that.
John held down a finance minister and education secretary during COVID because Kate Forbes became pregnant and had to take maternity leave. So John's a vastly skilled politician. There's been an evolution to John through the years. Under Alex Salmond, as SNP leader, and he was the leader in Holyrood, John was known as the meek man or the mild man of politics. Under Nicola Sturgeon, he became Sturgeon's attack dog. John has come of age. He can demand the respect and command the respect of the Parliament.
What's he like as a debater?
Again, I think he's probably got the experience and the knowledge behind him, because to win out in a debate, you just have to know how the land lies. You just have to have the facts on your side and be willing to repeat them at folk until, they either come to accept the thing or they read up on themselves and go, oh, right, okay, yeah. As long as someone's coming at it with facts, I can't see that they're onto, a loser at all.
John's a
details
man.
Yeah, I think he's very knowledgeable.
But the next election for the Scottish Parliament isn't until 2026, is that right?
That's good. 2 years, yeah.
So the main issue facing the SNP after this will be the general election. So yeah. I was wondering if we could get your take on that. So what do you think is going to happen?
The latest polling information tells us that the SNP will take 3% of the vote UK-wide. That translates to about 48% of the vote in Scotland. And the seat forecaster has got the SNP on between 32 and 47 seats across the different polling spectrums. YouGov and Redwood and Wooten normally have the SNP a polling war than all the rest of them. But generally, the SNP still get a healthy lead over Labour here in Scotland.
We send 35 to 40? Minister, then we're on to kind of good footing already. If we can get that, then any extra is really a bonus, I think, the way it kind of works out.
What do you think about Stephen Flynn as well, the lead MP?
I like Stephen Flynn.
I like him.
I like him a lot.
It's quite interesting. I would have had Nicola Sturgeon any day over Boris Johnson leading the country through COVID. which is a fascinating thing to say. And
I think
in
most
many
people
ways,
would
it's quite.
have a most people would have a lettuce over Boris Johnson.
My American friends were waking up early, purely just to catch her COVID reports, because they trusted her, more than most folk that they were hearing throughout COVID. One of my main patrons, she was waking up first thing in the morning, like early bells, like something like stupid, like 5 a.m. or something, just to be able to catch Nicola's, COVID updates. So,
on Stephen Flynn,
that says a thing.
On Stephen Flynn, that was also part of this infight in the SNP when the new guard kicked the old guard out of position in Westminster. You know, and we had the UK press giving it SNP and meltdown, SNP and meltdown. It's just party transitioning. Parties transition all the time. Yeah. I mean, if we look what's happened to the Labour Party since Tony Blair in 1999, they've transitioned into the Tory Party.
Yeah, they have. Jeez. But I mean, like, we can't tell you often enough how much they're teaming up over here, you know. That video on, was it East Renfrewshire? Like, the SNP councillor came out and said, listen, we've literally been given X amount of money to put towards these projects. Not only have the Tories and Labour teamed up to reject that budget, but they're also looking to make slashes to the budgets on necessary infrastructure and services and like activities for disenfranchised folk, disabled folk, and they're literally working in councils across Scotland to make things as bad as possible, because then they can turn around and go, oh, look how it's come out under the SNP. It's like, are you fucking...
Right,
SNP were voted in, but you have teamed up to create a majority to outvote the SNP within that council so that you can run it into the ground and then blame the SNP for it. Like, it's not as if we're blind to it. Do you know what I mean? They're doing it as if nobody's noticing, you know?
I get the impression that the Conservative Party in Westminster is doing that in general.
It's going to be on their side to make the place an absolute fucking wreck before the Labour Party take the hot seat. Because then they can go, oh, look what you've been landed with, good luck, kind of thing. And then, like, lambast them at every PMQs, like, oh, you've not done this yet, and look, you've not solved this problem. It's like, these are problems you created, are you fucking kidding me, you know?
Well, while at the same time, the Tories are blaming, you know, the previous Labour administration from 14 years ago.
I think the time for that ended about 4 years into their stint, didn't it? Like, yeah, it's ridiculous.
You
genuinely think that we were born yesterday, like buttoned up the back.
Interestingly, Jenny, in the situation we had in the Scottish Parliament last week, Labour, Tory and Lib Dem said you're going to coalition to put up a First Minister candidate.
Yeah.
Because the way it works here is when John is being elected on probably next Monday, he'll become the leader of the SNP next Monday. Next week, there'll be elections in the Parliament to select a new First Minister. All the parties will put up a candidate. But in this case, the Tory, Labour and Lib Dem said the coalition put a candidate up.
I mean, Alba might as well join that coalition with Ash voting with the Tories against Hamza, like, in the vote of no confidence, like, the unionist faction, because they've shown their true colours in the last couple of days, so, yeah.
What was interesting about the fallout with the SNP and the Greens and how Hamza's demise came about is there's an awful lot of SNP supporters won't forgive the Greens for this. And if we look at how the Greens got where they are because of our electoral system here, it was SNP voters that gave the Greens a second vote to get them their 7 MSPs. They ain't going to do that again.
But you know, like,
I've seen a lot of that online, yeah.
More aligned with the Greens politically than I am with the SNP, and I will continue to vote SNP 1, Green 2, like, regardless of this situation, because it's fucking politics. This is but a blip in a very long time span, it doesn't concern me. It doesn't put me off voting who I would vote for. Like,
what interested me about the situation in Scotland last week was the London centric commentators telling us what a basket case Scotland is.
Yeah,
we had the Andrew Neil on LBC. Leslie Ridder wasn't along with him right enough, but he explained the house jock who lives in London and hasn't been in Scotland for something like 50 years, tries to tell us the place is a basket case. Their infrastructure's right up to date, actually. After all, I'm sitting in a wee village in the middle of nowhere talking to you guys.
Do you know, I checked out...
Which was Leslie Riddick's point, and all she lives in the village.
Like, have you checked out any of Talk TV's coverage over
No,
this
not
terrible.
What they've been saying.
My wisdom tooth shattered, right? It's not been pleasant. I'm not getting to see a dentist on Monday. It's not great, you know? And I had my dinner watching that, and I can tell you that trying to eat on that wasn't the most unpleasant part of my dinner. That Talk TV, like, nonsense they were spouting. And then they had this guy on saying, he seemed like he was a Scot from the accent, but he's like, yes, now we're at a visit time when Scottish A&E waiting times are higher than in England. I'm like, where are you seeing? Point me to the freaking evidence. How is no one contesting this? That the lassie that's interviewing is like, oh yes, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like, fuck off. Like,
how long did it take for you? Because Dave, you brought up something as well off air, which I'll slightly touch on, but not go into detail. How long did Jenny? How long did it take you to get that wisdom tooth from being shattered to seeing a dentist?
I called them today, and because my dentist's in a different practice, I don't get to see him till Monday. But that's my fault, because I insist on seeing the same guy. Like, and it's only because he's unavailable. They would have got me an appointment today had I, like, been happy to see a different dentist. But I insist that he's the only dentist I trust with my gnashers. So that's my fault, you know.
So I'm the same. I'd rather know the person doing the work than not. It's taken me over a year. A year I've had to wait for a root canal and a crown. A year.
Are you serious?
Yes. Yeah.
I'll tell you this.
Now I've just done a video on it, plug for my channel, on the dental crisis and what's been taking place. And I would say COVID had an impact, but long term it's Brexit that's caused the biggest amount of damage to that. David, I won't go into too much detail, but off air you said that a friend of yours is now having to take physiotherapy. How long did it take them to get a physio appointment from their surgery to physio?
About an hour and a half.
How long?
About an hour and a half, as long as it took to organise the regime.
I've just spoken to someone this morning that told me their partner's damaged their leg, and it took them 3 months to get their first physio appointment, and over that 6 months, they've only had two physio appointments. This person's had two in 9 months, and it took
Which
3 months to get
useless.
The first one.
Yeah, you need constant physio to recover. You can't, having that space of time and only 2 9 months, it's pointless. You might as well not have had any.
Yeah.
It's just pointless.
Yes,
it's been a waste of the physio's and his time.
The worst part of the UK, I believe, is in Northern Ireland, where there was somebody who had to wait 3 years to see a nose and throat specialist.
Wow.
3 years.
This is wrong. Hear this all the time. I pick my phone up to the doctor, ask for an appointment. The doctor will then give me, I will then get triaged. I'll be told the doctor will phone me back at X o'clock. And then once I spoke to the doctor will say, right, come and see me. It takes a day to get an appointment. A day.
Yeah.
I will defend
the appointments.
Having been, London's different to the rest of the UK. But being in London, I will say I can get a same day appointment. Mm. And I can choose if I want to go in or I prefer a phone call conversation. So, you know, maybe I need a prescription for antibiotics. It's a phone call. If I need to go in and chat to someone, I can get it on that. But I think that depends on the practice, and that's only London. I can't compare. It's not fair to compare with the rest of the country. I'm not experiencing it. But I'm also aware, based on the video I've just done, that there are people pulling their own teeth out because it's quicker to do that and alleviate the pain than not. There was one woman who did it 12 times. She pulled out 12 teeth. Can you imagine? Because she can't get a dentist.
We're back in the Victorian era. I hope you realise that.
As a historian... Would you like to make some comparisons?
Jeez.
Now,
you
in
know
the
what?
Victorian period.
I would assume that your hairdressers and that down south could take up a bit of dentistry on the side, back like they did back in the day. Like,
do you know why?
Let them do a week course on how to pull teeth.
Well, post-Brexit Britain, it's like HGV drivers. All the tests are removed. So
yeah.
Everyone
just
can
the
do
hairdressers.
Everything.
Just a week showing them how to pull teeth and they'll be in the money. Like, they'll have queues at their doors.
Do you know why that Will Swirly thing moves around with the outside the barbers with the red and the white?
Because that's
Oh, wait, no, you're a historian. I'll ask these two. Do you know why?
Yeah, they were barbers.
Well, no, you're the historian, Jenny. Get that. The max answer.
It's like common knowledge, though, isn't it?
No, I don't think it is. If you're a historian,
no,
which you and I are.
I knew that before I took an interest in history. Like,
yeah, right.
Tell us. I have no idea why this
is. It's blood and bandages. It's to signify blood and bandages, so they can go. Yeah. That's why they were known as barber surgeons. You would go in there and they would do small levels of surgery. See?
I mean, I just assumed that. That's my bad for assuming. Like, sorry.
Lyme disease is back. Pull your own teeth out. We'll be hiring barbers soon to pull your teeth out.
That's what I'm saying. Train up your hairdressers. It's great. Like, give them all certificates and pulling teeth. It'll be awesome. They'll make loads of money and the people will be able to get their teeth done without doors and whatever they usually use to pull their own teeth. Pliers and shit. Like, I can't even imagine.
You know there's YouTube videos giving instructions on how to do it.
No.
Yeah,
I got an extraction, two extractions, because I hadn't been looking after my teeth, but I got two extractions done recently. And I can't imagine what it'd be like to try and remove the tooth without anesthetic or proper anesthetic. And then the after, so I was given antibiotics to make sure that I didn't get an infection or anything. You know, I just, like, it was done cleanly. I can't imagine trying to do it on my own with a bottle of whiskey or something. And then hoping for the best.
Can you imagine using pliers and then your tooth shatters while you're doing it?
And then
it?
You damage, yeah. But also you damage other teeth. And yeah, no, it's horrible. Maybe we should put a trigger warning on this video because... It's pretty horrible.
I mean, it seems that plenty of the population down south are doing it for themselves. So, but that's made it fairly hard now to get registered with a dentist because so many people registered on that policy becoming active, the free dental health for under 25s. So it's through NHS 24. When I was on the phones, we're getting a lot of that. Just people saying that none of the dentists in their area were actually taking on anymore. They were full. Their books were full.
Yeah.
I mean, myself, I travel all the way across the city. I travel like miles away to see my dentist. But again, that's because I trust him. I think a lot of people are finding they have to do the same, not by choice. They're having to kind of go outside their kind of home zone to find NHS because a lot have gone private as well, which is an added problem, you know.
Brexit had a big effect as well because all the Polish dentists who the Scottish NHS had hired then left.
Not just Polish, the majority of Greek folk I know are in the dentistry or orthodontics field, and Brexit affected that too. Yeah.
So if you had 100% of the EU citizens applying to come over to the UK to work in the medical sector, the day after Brexit and then a year on, that number dropped by 90% in terms of applications alone.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I absolutely believe that.
And I think there's 70,000 members of staff in the NHS that are EU citizens. I know a lot that have gone. They've just gone to Germany or somewhere else in the EU because they don't want the hassle. And
scientific community as well, because the Horizon scheme wasn't being extended to the UK. I don't know if they've accepted that now.
I mean, humans are always going to go the path of least hassle, the path of most convenience, aren't they? Do you know what I mean? So no one's going to like battle with nonsense just to try and get a job they can get anywhere else easier and for better money, you know?
There was Jacob Ismog this week in Parliament saying that immigration numbers need to be brought down even further to the tens of thousands.
It's just pure detrimental to Scotland. We need immigration. We want immigrants. We want new Scots to come and join us. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just, it doesn't work for us.
But
and
for
every
care,
time they do this,
for the care sector,
like,
you need
just don't care,
you bring people in.
And they're not even prepared to devolve that to us, to be able to allow us to hire who we want from where we want. They're set on making immigration their main stand, and it's just racism. It's just calling the racist out.
Do you guys think that when Labour are in power, they may devolve more powers to the Scottish Parliament?
No, I think I think Westminster quite like the MSPs still having to answer to them for the most everything. That's what makes the SNP the outlier, is the fact that it's our MPs that answer to Holyrood, really more than the MSPs answering to Westminster as Labour, Tories, Lib Dem. Even the Greens are with the SNP in that because
they're
them in Holyrood. But they've more power in Holyrood.
What about the idea of the I think this was floated by Gordon Brown, and it's definitely been in a couple of newspaper articles, but the idea of a Senate being made to replace the House of Lords, and it represents regional and regional numbers and countries within the UK. So it's basically the American system with a tweak.
It would still be disproportionately packed with people from England, because let's face it, that's where the greater population is.
So with the
same democratic deficit right across.
So it depends on how they do it. So this is one of the interesting things about the US Senate system. So you've got tiny states from the original 13 colonies mainly that have tiny populations, but they still get two senators, and every single state gets two senators, and that's it. So the population size doesn't matter. It's actually disproportionate. And there are good things and bad things to that. That means that small communities and states are listened to. It also means a small state is also disproportionately represented.
Scots have been calling for since the time of the Union. They wanted a federal union. They wanted Westminster to remain the English Parliament. They wanted Holyrood to remain Scotland's Parliament. They wanted an imperial parliament put in Yorkshire or somewhere the north of England between the two countries. And they wanted to send equal number of representatives. It didn't matter population, it didn't matter like revenue, none of that mattered. They wanted, like you say, 2, 3, 5 representatives to go from each country. And it wasn't just Scotland, England, Wales and Ireland. They wanted the colonies to also have equal representation in this imperial parliament that would speak for everybody.
Like the European
such
Union.
Such as trade or...
A bit like the European Union.
A bit like the European Union, yeah. Not very much like the British Union, though, which is what makes us leaving the British Union very different from Brexit scenario and why we went into the EU again, because at least that union was beneficial, as we've seen.
And you could choose to leave when you wanted, which you can't do otherwise.
There's more democracy, you might say.
You had Keir Starmer on a Sunday and pinned him on it. Starmer didn't know where to look when he was asking about denying the democratic will of the Scottish people.
Oh, he's an absolute hypocrite with
that. He's in the hot seat.
Labour's policy on the House of Lords is just to ban hereditary peers. He's just going to carry on with the system as it is.
Scots have also been calling for an end to the House of Lords since the 19th century. So, there's that.
Who's the actor who... the Scottish actor, he was in the first Wolverine movie a few years ago. Yeah. He was on the seat, Keir Starmer, and he said, well, Scotland didn't want to leave the EU, and you forced us out. And Keir Starmer then went, yeah, we've got to listen to you. It's really important that we listen to Scotland. And then he comes off that and then says, no, we've all got to stay outside the EU.
He was up here being scared by the continued denial of the will of the Scottish people. That's four or five mandates now demanding that the people get another referendum. And four or five times it's been ignored. Now is not the time.
Do you think that Starmer coming into power, which is looking more and more likely, do you think that's going to hinder Scottish independence or help Scottish independence?
The way the polls are going at the moment, desire for independence is rising. It went from 48-52 today to 54 in favour of independence to 46 against. But it's just within or out with the margin of error of 3% in these polls is what they say it is. So they're calling it 50-50, So will Starmer make any difference to that? No.
And every time the majority England vote in an asshole into the hot seat, it's only going to climb higher. Because you're talking about Scotland being bound together by a first minister that we vote. But the Prime Minister that's voted in also has to try and glue everybody together. He has to appeal to everybody, including Scottish nationalists. And there hasn't been a great track record of that,
Labour have been growing, though, haven't they, under Ernest?
No.
Are the numbers staying the same?
Just about. Aye, the polling information's junk.
But
you take it across the 14 polling companies that are operating. Most of them have the SNP at least a 7-point lead. It was a 1-point and 11-point lead, but it's still a massive healthy lead.
So it's not going to make any difference. I mean, he's not exactly.
There was one poll that said, a number of polls that were saying that that the Tories could end up with 0 seats after the general election, and that
we'll have to see
In Scotland or Westminster?
In Scotland. But a lot of these votes would go to Labour. They may not go to the
SNP. Max, I don't know if you know this, but when the polling came out to say that the Tories were probably going to be, Westminster Tories were probably going to be wiped out in Scotland, we were told that was anti-democratic, not to vote for the Tories.
What?
Yeah, we were told it was anti-democratic by the unionists up here, not to have three unionist parties represented in the Parliament doing that.
Well, is there like a quota?
Like,
do you remember after the referendum and there was only like one Tory, one Labour, one Lib Dem, the rest were SNP? It's because they you're never going to see zero of a party. Like,
well, maybe this time.
Zero Tories. Okay. And the panic up here was, and this was the argument up here, the panic up here when it looks as if the Tories are going to get wiped out up here. And the argument is, if we wipe out one side of the political unionists, then we'll move on to wiping out the next side. The next side meaning Labour, you know, because we already won cheek of the Westminster arse from MP wise from our nation. And the panic is and the fear was that we'd go that one step further and wipe out the other cheek of the unionist arse as well, being Labour. But at this point in time, it looks like Labour are actually going to take the Tory seats and the SNP will be running about 40 odd seats again.
Which is fine.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because there was a poll out today for Westminster saying, I think again, YouGov, saying that there will be only 12, if according to the survey, and if the survey was correct and reflected the voting pattern, the Tory party would have 12 seats in Westminster. I mean, you talk about not wiping out a party. I mean, the Liberals were one of the biggest parties in the UK in Westminster at the beginning of the century. And then they were wiped out and they sort of had to merge with the Lib Dems. So it can happen. I think the Tory party is still quite adaptable. And there will always be financial backers that will chuck in a few million, which always helps any political campaign.
Mm. But there's also a problem for Labour. Like, if Labour win over the Tory votes and Keir Starmer wins a massive majority in Westminster, he's not going to listen to Scotland, is he?
Because they don't, but we don't have the representation to be listened to. We've never
because he wouldn't listen to the SNP because they're in the opposition, but he wouldn't also listen to his own MPs because he wouldn't need to because he'd have a majority. So like, what's the feeling amongst people who are going to vote for the Labour Party in Scotland? Do they feel that, well, if we win seats in Scotland, we'll have influence over Keir Starmer?
Nothing's changed. Like, that's what I was saying before about the MSPs at Holyrood from these unionist parties having to answer to those down at Westminster because that's where the power for them is.
But my question is, Westminster's lackeys, always been that way.
Sure. Like,
I understand that, but my question is more directed at the voters, the people who come out and vote for the Labour Party at the general election in Scotland.
Made a difference before. Like, that's what I mean. It's always been that way, so I can't imagine why it would change now for the voters. Like, it's always been that way.
Would some of them, like, what would be a motivation for somebody in Scotland voting for the Labour Party at the general election?
There might be a few hangers-on that are like, oh, my dad voted Labour, so I'll vote Labour. You know, there might
there
be
a lot of like that.
There might be Tories who are, like, have lost favour with the Tories purely because of the arse that Truss and Boris and all the FUDs that have been like in the hot seat down there have maybe just fallen out of love with that party because of that, and they've decided that Labour being basically, like Davey says, they're two cheeks of the same arse up here. They team up in councils across the place to try and make things worse so that worse can reflect in the SNP, you know. So I can see Tory voters voting Labour and them that are just voting because that's the way my father did, kind of.
There'll also be the glory hunters that might be part of a massive Labour victory, you know?
Yeah, maybe people hedging their bets a wee bit on it too, like.
It is a bit shocking to see. So, again, another video that I did, I went and interviewed people around London to see who they were voting for, and I chose Hammersmith because it's surrounded by Labour, Lib Dem and Conservatives, so I thought, okay, that should be a pretty broad area of views. Number of people that were coming out for Susan Hall. And you're a bit like, what is it actually going to take for people to realise you shouldn't vote for the Tory party?
Who owns the bridge in Hammersmith? Who owns the Hammersmith bridge? She was asked about that.
She didn't know how much police officers were, which is 36K. She got first starting, and she didn't know a bus. Yeah, didn't know bus fare. And you're like, those are the things that you're responsible for, and you don't know. And yet people are still coming out and saying they want to vote for a Conservative. And a lot of it seems
because they don't like Khan.
Seems to be more about not liking Khan. But then when you start asking questions about that, they'll sort of go, oh, crime's gone up. And you're like, yeah, but that's generally caught. We've seen through statistical data that generally that's caused by poverty. And who've implemented two of the biggest policies that have caused poverty in the UK? Brexit, austerity, Tories. But you're going to blame Khan, who doesn't have control over the entire economy, but can slightly influence London.
That was one of the things that annoyed me about the carry-on here in Scotland last week when I heard Stephen Flynn, who was talking about the SNP have taken their eyes off the ball in the economy and the cost of living crisis. The cost of living crisis was made in Westminster. And Scotland doesn't run Scotland's economy. That's done from London. We only have one fiscal lever up here, and that's income tax. So actually, when Stephen Flynn's talking about the SNP up here having taken their eye off the ball in the economy and cost of living, none of it's devolved. I don't know what the hell he's thinking about.
Is he talking about, so maybe this sort of culture war that the Tories have been engaging in, and is it about that? Because a lot of the criticism from the Westminster media has been that the SNP are focused on gender and stuff like that instead of cost of living. I think that's just a smear campaign. But is that what Stephen Flynn was talking about?
I'm not sure what he was talking about. But when he was talking about the SNP and Scott, I'm sure he was talking about Holyrood, having taken their eye off the ball in the economy and on the cost of living crisis. We don't regulate the electricity companies. We don't regulate oil and gas, which is where most of the cost of living crisis came from. And rampant profiteering by supermarkets, we don't bloody regulate. But as I say, on the economy, when they said they came the eye after the bone of the economy, the Scottish economy is the second biggest earner for the UK apart from the southeast of England. And our economic data at the moment is really good. I mean, we've got export growth of 4%, unemployment is down. Whereas the trend UK-wide is unemployment's up. Our living wage is higher than the national living wage down that road. And the tax system means the lowest earners pay less tax than the people down that road.
You also don't have control over the import checks that they've just forced through, even though they said that with Brexit you wouldn't get them.
Huh?
And that was almost amazing to listen to. I was literally increasing myself in the insanity of what the ITV presenters were saying. Because on the one hand, they were saying, we need to put these import checks in. And then they were saying, but we're not going to do them, but we're still going to charge you money. So you're going to charge money to not do the thing that you were supposed to do. And of course, then I realized that they announced this on national TV. So if I'm a bad guy smuggler, I'm like, cha-ching. I'm going to continue throwing stuff through the border because I know no one's going to check it.
Yeah.
And I think they did on the plus side, the border force did actually catch, I think, 3.5 tons of rotten meat. And from what I've understood, that meat that's rotten that's coming through the border is coming because you can't sell it in the EU, but you can sell it in the UK. And when it gets to the UK, they then process it into mince and sell it at a cheap price.
I assume it wasn't like actual checks that found that. I assume it was the smell that attracted attention. You went, wait a minute, look at that one. someone.
There was a case of 20 trucks that were checked and 19 of them had contraband at one stage.
Yes.
And that was a spot check. That wasn't regular checking. It was like, okay, let's check 20 trucks. Oh, 19 of them have contraband. So yeah, it's
it's not just a smuggler's paradise. It's now at a stage where going to the supermarket is a game of Russian roulette. You don't really know what's in the packaging anymore. Remember, we're sending our meat outwards to be processed because of Brexit. We don't have enough meat processors here. But they guarantee what's coming back is the quality stuff we're sending out. And now that we know it's not being checked, if I'm a Romanian food processor, I'm selling Scottish beef to the locals and I'm sending back Romanian nags, you know what I mean?
Was there not something about taking sell-by dates off of food as well, or end-by dates off of food? That was like somebody's policy. Yeah, and it's like, wait a minute, if you're letting in already dubious food, and then you've decided, no, we're not going to put sell-by or use-by dates on these things, it's up to the consumer to decide
choice. You have
whether
choice.
It's okay for them to eat at the end. It's like, what the fuck?
Brexit was about choice. It's also about toughening up people, you know, like in the old days where, you know, you're told to like not to overly wash your hands and stuff. It's like, this is a similar approach, maybe. Yeah.
Boost your immune system.
Send the kid out with a spoon and go play in that mud.
Slightly reminds me of the solutions that the Victorians had for dealing with the Thames. Wasn't to clean the Thames, it was to put a nose peg on so you couldn't smell it.
Yeah, but the stuff they used to put in baby milk, like milk that was going to be fed to babies, like just to make it last longer, or to
chalk, wasn't it?
No. To give greater quantities. It was not. It was all kinds of stuff they'd put in it. Like there was formaldehyde put in a lot of cases because that would and things to make it smell better, you know, so it didn't smell as off. And but alcohol, that was a big thing as well. Like amending the alcohol recipes, because a wee bit of poison makes you feel a bit drunk, you see, you know. So yeah, craziness.
What did you think of Ben Habib's comments, Max, this week on allowing asylum seekers to drown in the sea?
I think it's amazing that Reform UK have dropped candidates for saying less than that, but Ben Habib has been protected. He's Richard Tice has come out and defended what Ben Habib has said. So Ben Habib, for anyone who doesn't know, was asked by Julia Hartley Brewer about people drowning in the, would he be okay with people drowning in the channel? And he said, absolutely. Now he's come out and said, well, you know, I was taken out of context, or that's not really what I said, but it's up there for anyone who wants to check it out themselves. But I think it's a real scraping of the bottom of the barrel when it comes to politics. And, you know, for the local elections, there's been pretty horrible stuff coming out. And this is just a taste of what's going to come for the general. It's going to be, you know, complete gloves off. The Tories are going to lose. Reform UK believe they have a chance of knocking out a few Tories, taking votes from them, and they're going to do everything that they can. And, you know, some of the really toxic stuff, see, the politicians don't seem to care about the victims in this. You know, you're going to hear loads of calls coming in now as we get closer to the summer and the number of crossings increase, about people saying, well, send out gunships and just sink them and, you know, throw them back into the sea. And it's becoming more and more mainstream. You know, this sort of language was what you'd find in the comment section of a YouTube video or on social media. But now you have a quote unquote mainstream politician saying it and not facing any consequences.
People's relationship with their own humanity. Yeah. I would like to see that poll and see where the majority stand. Because I can't believe that the majority are on side with people drowning, that the majority are on side with what's going on over in Palestine, that the majority are on side with children getting homeless and not getting food throughout.
He's not the first UK politician. He's not the first UK politician to say it was all right just to let people die. That was Keir Starmer. There were no consequences for him. Well, it's all right for Israel to shut up water, food, and the electricity in Gaza. The consequences of that is famine. People die.
Yep.
So Starmer's the first one to show inhumanity. To watch it being followed up by Ben Habib's no surprise. You know, but Labour's got a wee bit of worry in their hands doing that road as well, because it appears like the People's Workers' Party is hoping to do the same to them as what Reform UK is doing to the Tories. So we'll see how that goes, depending on how long. And that could also have an impact on when the election's called, because the Tories might want to give the People's Workers' Party a chance to organise.
It was interesting as well, because obviously Rishi Sunak came out and attacked George Galloway about getting into Rochdale.
Easily done.
Rochdale. And suggested that he was a racist, but he hadn't said anything about Lee Anderson. So couldn't say that. And it was also interesting this week as well to link that further. Lee Anderson was in Blackpool. Did you see the video he did in Blackpool? So he went down some alleyway in between two sets of houses. You know, those like Victorian houses on either side, little garden, and there's an alleyway down the middle. He went down there and it's just full of rubbish. And he literally started saying, this is down to migrants and there's no British people on here. But you're like, there are people called fly tippers. You don't know where that rubbish has come from. You've instantly made an assumption because they're migrants. And I did two things this week, two little anecdotes. I called up Lancashire Police and reported Lee Anderson to the police, saying that's racist. And I said, I had an argument with the police. I said, and I do this a litmus test with my students, my history students. I'll say to them, take this piece of text from a modern politician and take the word migrant or other words that they've used, such as Mexicans, such as Donald Trump, and replace it with the word Jew. And tell me whether or not you find that sentence now acceptable. Of course, none of my students do. They're like, actually, that's horrendous what they've just said. And I said, you're listening to that and you're thinking it's acceptable. But as soon as you've trade a word that we all have been taught is unacceptable, you then suddenly realize that what they're saying is unacceptable.
It's not necessarily that it's like more acceptable for me. It's the fact that it's repeated so often that it becomes like a bad smell. You grow to just, you know, not notice it after a while. It's because it's repeated so often, it becomes like a nothing, you know.
But the message of anti-Semitism is repeated so often that it becomes a message that you can't tolerate. So when you then put that litmus test to it, you then have people suddenly going, oh, wait, that's actually really racist what he said, which is what I had to say to the police. Because the police were trying to, I got the impression from Lancashire police, and I'm going to throw them under the bus. I got the impression they didn't want to deal with it. They said they will, but they were actually telling me, go and report it to Parliament. I literally said to them, Parliament's not going to give a shit. What I cited the law. I said, you broke the Communications Act of 2003. You broke the Public Order Act of 1986. And then, then they said, report it to the Reform Party. I was just like, are you mad? But I do have a good anecdote. I haven't told many people this. So I was in my local Morrison's, and it just so happened that the CEO of Morrison's was in there. And I was a bit, and everything was tidied up, and the security guards were for once not on their mobile phones. It's like, oh, interesting. And then as I'm walking past, Jeremy Hunt walks up to the CEO of Morrison's and literally says the words, I'm really impressed with what you're doing here. And I turned to Jeremy Hunt and said, I'm not very impressed with you. Just, I walked on, didn't stop. And then he shouted.
You didn't end
back
up with any broken.
What's that?
Sorry, go on. No, no, I was going to say you didn't end up with any broken bones.
Well, security followed me. Morrison security followed me. That was funny. And he shouted back at me because he was embarrassed because he's obviously with this group of people. And I just said that. He turned around and he said, it's democracy. To which I shouted back, no, it's not. It's incompetence.
Not wrong. Not wrong.
So there is, you know, it's nice to have a little bit of a silver lining on an end to a show. I'm sorry to say we're done.
Thanks, guys. Well, that was great.
Thanks very much. If you like the show, please subscribe. If you want more great guests like this, hit that like and subscribe button.
'So Alba's main chick went and voted with the unionists against the SNP. So
that's going to work out well, isn't it?
Well, we kind of expected it, and it was just nice to see it all play out exactly as we had foretold.
She's supposed to be really clever, isn't she?
No. No, obviously not. She doesn't have a finger on the button. Do you know what I mean? Like,